This is Remarkable. Welcome to Remarkable, a marketing podcast for podcasters who aren't marketers. I'm your host and teacher, Dave Mooring, and I want to know what it takes to stand out, get noticed, and build a committed audience of listeners and fans. I'm on a quest to find out what makes a podcast remarkable, and I invite you to join me each week as I interview other podcasters, experts, and marketers. The Remarkable Podcast is part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. If you'd like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. This is episode number 14. In this episode of Remarkable, I have a conversation with a radio host turned marketer who came full circle 2 years ago when she landed behind the microphone to launch a podcast on social media and healthcare. She's had an extensive career in marketing, and in this episode, we talk in detail about social media and digital marketing, and she shares some great tips on how to utilize Twitter to promote and grow your podcast. She shares practical tips for increasing engagement and maximizing exposure on Twitter, including how to build relationships with guests after they've been on your show, what a tweet chat is and how to use it, and how to quickly find and curate great content to share with your audience. We also discuss the importance of connecting with influencers, the prep work you should do before you ever launch a podcast if you haven't already, and how and why Blab may be a great opportunity to build your network and your audience. My guest and I both hail from the Triangle region of North Carolina, which includes Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill, and she serves with fellow podcaster Charles Gupton and me as the organizers of the North Carolina Podcasting Meetup. She's the founder of the Get Social Health Academy and the host of the Get Social Health Podcast, where she just recently published episode number 100. Here's Janet Kennedy. Janet, welcome to the Remarkable Podcast.
I feel an obligation to be remarkable, David, but I'm really excited to be here.
Well, you're already remarkable, which is why I'm having you on the show.
Well, I think it has more to do with people make remarks about me, but that's okay. That still fits your criteria.
Well, I appreciate you taking time to join me today. And I'd like to start with your background in podcasting. So, Janet, tell me, how long have you been podcasting?
I have officially been podcasting. It'll be about 2 years and another week or so.
Wow, congratulations. And you've recently passed 100 episodes, is that right?
I was so excited about passing 100 episodes. So I'm at like, tomorrow will be, I think, 103, that I gave myself a migraine and had to go to bed for 2 days. So,
oh no. So you didn't even get to enjoy the relief of hitting that number, right?
Seriously, I was all psyched up about, and then tomorrow and Friday, everybody's going to be saying congratulations and I'm going to get all this social media love, and I could barely hold my head up straight. So, Oh, well, don't set yourself up, folks, too high. 100 will be nothing when you get to 500. So
that's
don't
right.
worry about it.
Well, now let me back up a little bit. And I know that you are a marketing professional. How did you get into marketing in the first place? How did you end up in that career path?
So this is the perfect full circle. And everyone's going to go, now I get it. I actually started my career in radio.
Okay.
So my first... Yeah, there you go. My first job, first professional job after school was was part-time sales and then part-time on air and produced commercials for a little radio station in my hometown. We were so small and so awful that in Arbitron ratings, they had a little asterisk as in numbers too small to count. So we literally had no money. Nobody would send us records. All we had were the worst of the worst releases that nobody never made a top 1,000. And so we were just a pathetic little radio station. And our reel-to-reel tape deck was actually in a leather suitcase, and you had to hold it on with bull clips, hold the reels on with bull clips. We were awful, but I had a blast, and it was a very much a learning process. So been around the mic for a long time, and then graduated up to, as we all do, I think I worked for about 6 radio stations, moving my way up the ladder, ended up being everything. I've done copywriting, I've done on air, I've done radio shows, I've done ski reporting and swap shop and all kinds of, you know, on air radio stuff. And then an opportunity came up to interview for a job as the marketing director for the shopping mall in the town I was living in at that time, Spartan, South Carolina. And the idea of having a regular job, a real job, was really exciting to me. So I became actually was the promotions director for the radio station, and then moved over to shopping center marketing. And then after that, I was in marketing for a luxury playset company, for Comcast, and even did a little work with a healthcare organization. So marketing has really been what I've been involved in my whole career.
So you mentioned something about healthcare. How did you go from general marketing to specifically working in the healthcare field? The title of your podcast is Get Social Health. How did you land there?
So it's a combination of things all coming together at the same time. One is that in the market where I live, which is Raleigh, North Carolina, I was very fortunate to be a member of the American Marketing Association and to be president of the Triangle Interactive Marketing Association. So social media became a big part of what I was learning. As I was learning that and hanging around a lot of very, very cool people, I also became involved or started working for a company that did consumer analytics and had an opportunity to get involved in healthcare. And up until that time, I was using social media, literally socially, just to engage with other marketing professionals, built a really nice network of folks, talked about a lot of things that, you know, people wanted to read about. But I wasn't necessarily focusing in any particular vertical my expertise. When my day job company wanted to spend a lot more time focusing on using analytics in healthcare, I wanted to join online conversations. But my personal handle of jkennedy93 really wouldn't make a lot of sense. If a healthcare company would look at that, they'd go, why are you talking about marketing in the Triangle or the roller derby or, right, you know, the art museum or something? So I needed to create a handle that would get some traction. Thus came Get Social Health, and I was also able to pick up the domain, and I started tweeting. As it turns out, because I have a lot of expertise in marketing and social media, I got traction very quickly and was able to engage in a very high level in a short period of time. So the overlapping coincidences of I was listening to a lot of marketing podcasts, and it just happened that in the fall of 2013, every podcast I listened to did a podcast about how cool podcasting is, and this was the future, and everybody needed to think about podcasting. And for me, seemed very natural with my radio background. This would be a way for me to be able to express myself that wouldn't involve writing a blog post. I was really excited about not having to be a blogger. And so I went through the process of learning to become a podcaster. And the other side of the coin was, while I was very experienced in marketing and social media, I didn't necessarily have deep knowledge in healthcare. So I wanted to ask questions. And the best way to do that is, have a podcast and you can call up everybody you ever wanted to learn from and ask them, well, why do you do that? And how does that work? And so 100 episodes later, I feel like I have enough knowledge that I can share with other folks directly. So that's kind of the two-sided, using podcasting to move my career forward as well as my knowledge base.
Yeah, that's a great set of, I don't know if coincidences or you just happened to be in the right place at the right time, but that's really cool.
Well, it was a plan. And one of the things that I heard over and over again in early podcasting communities is niche down. Not everybody can have the podcast about being an entrepreneur. I mean, there's a lot out there. And while podcasting kind of wins the war against blogs, as far as there's a 1.2 million blogs and there's about 250,000 podcasts, which does blow my mind in many ways. So you still have an advantage in that the numbers are there. It's a little easier to get some traction with a podcast. It still is really hard to find that niche that people will spend the time with. And so that's why it sort of made sense for me to niche down. I don't need 10,000 downloads an episode to make an impact when I'm talking about social media and healthcare.
So how do you measure success? How do you Did you have something in mind before you even started, whether your niche was small enough or big enough, or, you know, how did you decide whether you were going to continue or not?
Well, probably a couple of different things. From a personal standpoint, the amount of time it takes to do the podcast has never become a burden. That's not to say that there weren't some Sunday nights when I was struggling going, what the heck am I publishing on Tuesday? There definitely those moments have happened. And I have a couple times scrambled and called in a few Twitter favors to say, hey, I really need somebody to talk to you. Are you available? But on the other hand, I so enjoy doing the podcast, having the interviews. And while my podcast may be 35 to 45 minutes long, most of my conversations are at least an hour. And I've been on for a couple hours with people like Meredith Gould and Mike Sevilla in my space. So it's just such a pleasure to talk to people and learn things about them that I didn't know. And so many of the people, because it is about healthcare, are telling me really personal stories and really important stories, whether it's the empowered patients, or it's about what's going on in digital health. It's so exciting and so interesting that it's a pleasure. So that is probably the most important part. And I know you and I talk about podcasting with other people. It's about speaking with passion. It's not going out and finding the niche you can make $1 million in, because honestly, there isn't one. If you don't care, there isn't one. So it's about something that, do you really want to talk about this? Do you really want to share information about this topic? And I found that all my marketing background, which was very kind of general, business to consumer, this healthcare has got an incredibly important goal of saving lives and making people's lives better. And suddenly I found myself just really charged up with the ability to share these stories. So it really was from a standpoint of, this is important work, regardless of whether I can make a buck out of it or not.
That's great. So the success for you is just the impact that you're having. Is that right?
Well, certainly initially it was personal success. Am I learning? Am I growing? Am I becoming more knowledgeable about this? So it really did have a very personal goal for me. Then it got to be, this is wonderful. I'm sharing stories that other people don't know about or aren't hearing, and I am letting people know about these important people and the things that are happening to them, regardless of whether they have a giant national Twitter following. But then ultimately, the success metric also is personal again in the sense of business. I want to make a business out of what I'm doing now, teaching social media for healthcare. Therefore, I need to evangelize enough so that the folks who are not active, the physicians and healthcare practitioners who are not active, are not only saying, oh, you know, that makes sense now. You're telling me stories I can relate to in my practice. I do want to do social media. Oh, and you know what? You know something, so I might want to get my information from you.
Yeah, what's been the hardest part about building the podcast in your particular niche?
So building the podcast wasn't so hard, simply because there are thousands and thousands of stories worth sharing. And again, the hook being always that there is some social media angle in there, even if the social media angle is it's somebody just learning about and doing it. So there are lots of stories to tell. The challenge is, how do you actually make a business out of this? How do you take this information and build a reputation as someone who knows something about marketing and social media when indeed the people you're talking to aren't quite there yet? So hopefully in the process of talking to other people and doing the podcast, what's the expression? When the student is ready, the master will appear. Well, I'm not saying I'm a master, but when somebody is ready and they are at that point where, like, okay, I get it. I need to be doing social media. Who am I going to look to? Hopefully I'm one of the folks whose names pop up.
Well, it seems like you're in a good trend or a good spot with healthcare always being a hot topic and always in need, and social media on the rise, and digital marketing in general. So
what's interesting about the field is there are definitely some marketing professionals who are extremely well known and have very high credibility in the field, and that's great. And they work for ad agencies for the most part. There are a few that are consultants, but they all work on the enterprise level. And For me, as an individual practitioner trying to, establish a business, that's not where my focus is. I was looking to the people that who really needs my help. And I think that's what we would refer to in retail as the mom and pop. So it's the independent healthcare practice. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean it's all straight up media, medical. It could be anybody who has to be concerned about privacy and HIPAA. So that actually could be massage therapists, physical therapists, any practice where you're actually taking insurance or dealing with somebody's medical condition.
So what's been the, most successful thing you've done to boost your podcast and connect or build your audience?
Well, as much as there are books out there about don't chase the influencer, the most successful thing that kind of got me off the ground is that I had two or three folks, particularly physicians, who were sort of known as gurus in social media or very active social media users. So lots of thanks go out to Dr. Kevin Poe, Dr. Mike Sevilla, Dr. Brian Vardabedian. All of them have been very active in not just using social media, but speaking to the medical community about the importance of social media. So some of my early guests were super helpful in not just giving me the opportunity to speak to them, but healthcare is an incredibly generous field. If you need to know something, there are people out there who are willing to teach you and share and promote. And what I have found is that most of the folks that have been my guests have been really great about sharing. So I think that's the place to start. When you consider that our audience already is one that's slow to come to social media, if the folks that are already there who are evangelists are willing to share, that makes a huge, huge difference.
Do you seek out those people when you're looking for guests, or is it just you get lucky if they happen to be an evangelist and share?
Well, definitely as I go through my list and I'm being more organized now about who I have on my show, I am looking for influencers. That's one group. Another group are people who actually work in the field doing marketing for physicians. So I seek out a lot of small healthcare ad agencies, web design firms, people who are really doing nuts and bolts stuff so that I can have these kind of episodes that are really full of tactical, practical stuff. You can only do theory so much time. You know, the point is, hey, I get it. We ought to do it.
Right. And how do you do it?
Yeah. So the influencers are very important. They generally are very generous and share information. But it's also important to have them on board, because if you get a couple of folks, then that triggers the waterfall. So yes, I do think you need to chase influencers as long as they actually influence.
Yeah.
And I will say that I've been real lucky in that a couple of folks like who might be relatively new to social media, they're very good in their field. And they're like, I don't know if I need to do that. And I'm like, check out my website. And then they go, oh, you've interviewed so-and-so and so-and-so. Okay, you're all right.
Right, right.
And that has been a huge boost I rarely get turndowns. I may get, I'm way too busy and it might be 2 months before I can talk to you, but I rarely get turndowns for being on the show. And that certainly makes it a lot easier and has put me in a position to be able to balance my guests so I can have the big influencer versus the guy down the street who really has something good to say about video marketing.
Speaking of nuts and bolts, let's dig into that a little bit. How do you go about promoting your show or marketing your show?
Well, you know, the main gist of what I do is in Twitter, because that's where a lot of the early adopters in healthcare social media are coming. That's what they hear a lot. And I don't know if people are aware of this, but I do want to share. This is really important stuff. There's a website called Simplr, S-Y-M-P-L-U-R, and they have something called the Healthcare Hashtag Project. And there are hundreds, if not still hundreds of hashtags that are healthcare related. So for instance, if you have diabetes, you can go in and look up diabetes and you can find out where are the conferences about diabetes, where are the Twitter chats about diabetes, where are the general hashtags that are used, so that you can actually find the conversations online that are happening. Well, because of stuff like that, it makes it very easy when I have guests who are in a specific field. For instance, I recently interviewed someone who's a musician who mm-hmm. has cerebral palsy. I've interviewed other people who might specialize in diabetes or in multiple sclerosis. That way, by using the right hashtags, I can find those communities. So Twitter's my first and foremost, and that's my go-to. And then I will cross-promote in LinkedIn and Facebook. Facebook, you know, that's really a placeholder for me where I want to have a little bit longer form information. So I'm not trying to build a huge audience in Facebook. It's really where I just direct people when I have a little bit more to say. And then LinkedIn I use quite a bit, and that's been very effective as far as sharing and reaching certain communities and allowing me to connect with a lot of folks who, in healthcare, the only thing they do is LinkedIn, because that's the safe social media website.
Right, right. So that's a really cool website, and I'll include a link to that. Is there anything like that? And that's healthcare specific, is that right?
Yes, that is all about healthcare. So it's actually, I imagine, harder for folks to find common interests in other fields, but I'm sure they're out there, but it's definitely healthcare related. So whether you are an e-patient or you have a family member who has, has a brain cancer or any kind of cancer, you can go find out where the conversations are happening and you can get really pertinent, relevant information. Because I have to tell you, unless you're following someone like the Cleveland Clinic or the Mayo Clinic, you don't want to be getting your health information from Facebook. Just telling you right now, unless you have vetted out your source, it's baloney.
Yeah. So I want to ask about what is a day in the life look like for you on Twitter, as far as how are you building relationships and following people and connecting with people? Or are you just sort of advertising your podcast episodes and things like that?
I very much feel that my role as a healthcare social media specialist or whatever I am. I hate to give myself a title. So
Rockstar is your title.
Okay, thank you. I'll take your title. I just won't give myself one. Since I'm in the field, and this is very much specifically what I talk about, I feel like I have to walk the walk and talk the talk. So while I do talk about my podcast, since it is very much a podcast of service, I don't worry about talking about it too much, mm-hmm. but it really is that traditional 80-20 rule. I'm definitely curating at least 80% of my content from other sources and other people, retweeting folks who I admire and who are doing good work that needs to share. And then, about 20% will be my podcast and, maybe 5% will be the other products or services that I have developed out of all this work in social media.
What are you using to keep up with content and curate that content?
As it turns out, I actually have a service that collates all my subscriptions, and they keep telling me I have subscribed to 1,800 email lists.
Wow.
nobody gives anything up for free. Yeah. Eventually, at the end of the year, I think I did a little house cleaning and I got rid of a lot of the junky stuff that's in there. So for the most part, I have about 4 or 5 lists where they are already curating information. And so I curate the curation and find the stuff that's much more specific to what I'm interested in. And then I follow a couple of key hashtags where there are other folks that are in healthcare marketing who also share a lot of great information and will share that as well.
And do you get a lot of response and engagement from what you're doing?
It depends. There are certain people that, when they speak, the world stops to listen, and they will get a lot of traction. And I feel an obligation to share their stuff because it's just so darn good. And then other times, you never know. I mean, sometimes it's a funny tweet that gets a lot of love, particularly mm-hmm. during a tweet chat where you can let your hair down a little bit. You can respond a little bit. Sometimes when they're getting deep in the weeds of electronic health records or health IT, I sometimes struggle a little bit to contribute. So I do maybe more retweeting than original posting. But if we're talking about marketing or social media, I will often have a perspective that is shared often. And then there are some times where I'm in a healthcare tweet chat and I am sharing my perspective as a patient that I don't really have any kind of, I don't have 2 cents on the topic. But since we're talking, I'm always a patient. Everyone is always a patient or a consumer. So you always have a perspective where you can share. And sometimes I just like to ask the dumb question because I don't know. You know, why do you do this that way? And I don't have any problem saying, you know, I'm not a physician. I'm not a medical practitioner. I don't have 20 years of healthcare marketing. You know, so I need to come in and say, well, why do you do it this way? Because there's still a lot of very traditional marketing going on. And if you're still buying billboards to assuage some senior surgeon's ego, you're not doing your job.
Yeah. Well, I work with a lot of small business owners who are still fairly shy when it comes to social media and getting online. Define for us, and I assume this the same way for you, but define what a tweet chat is just for those people listening that might not know.
So the wonderful thing about Twitter and Instagram is a little bit that way as well, in that you can use the hashtag or also known as the pound sign. If you use that at the beginning of a phrase or a word or an acronym, anyone who is following that same word or phrase or acronym can all see the same content. So unlike having to follow somebody but with an at symbol to see what they're saying, any people could use a hashtag and then you're all in the same community. So in healthcare, there are a lot of regular tweet chats. For instance, Sunday nights at 9 o'clock, there's a tweet chat that's HCSM, which stands for Healthcare Communications Social Media, and is a Twitter chat that happens once a week at that time for an hour on that specific topic. Another extremely popular one is HCLDR, which stands for Healthcare Leader. That's every Tuesday night at 8:30. And that particular tweet chat, which may be the best produced Twitter chat in healthcare, is a group of three individuals who've come together. They write a blog post, a very extensive blog post, and then they post ahead of time specific questions. And then what you'll do is you'll jump in, you introduce yourself, everybody says, hey, and then here's the first question, you know, how can patients relate to their healthcare providers via digital? And then people are popping in and out, sometimes retweeting the question, sometimes adding an answer. And then here come the debates and here comes the back and forth. And so you end up going through, you know, 3 to 4 to as many as 6 questions in an hour where people are literally sharing 140 character answers to certain questions or ideas.
That's very cool. Have you seen that work outside of healthcare? Is that
certainly
in other industries?
Certainly in marketing in general, there's been a few tweet chats held locally. I've also seen it used in the entrepreneurial startup space where they'll invite someone who's got a successful startup to come in and have conversations. And I'm sure there in any vertical you can find one. I'm not looking for any more than those, but they're definitely all over the place. And I think the unique thing about a tweet chat is the ability to connect people of like mind or at least of like interest in a topic who would never run across each other any other way.
Yeah, very cool. Now I want to ask, is there some common advice that you've been told about marketing and growing your podcast that you think is wrong or common knowledge or common advice out there?
Well, we just covered the don't chase, do chase the influencer. And I do think it's important. I think what you need to balance is don't only chase the influencer. If whatever you have as your topic, hopefully you're giving equal time to people who have a wonderful story to tell and something important to say. And who cares if they have a super popular podcast or they already have 100,000 Twitter followers? If you're only chasing those people, then I think you just become shallow. If you're not adding deep, rich context and giving people who need a voice, then you're probably not truly serving or having a true servant mentality to your podcast. So that I think that is important. I think podcasters that I know are not using Twitter very effectively at all. And especially those Twitter bombers, which I don't see as much anymore, but probably because I've blocked them. Those people, curses upon you. Twitter bombing is horrible. Don't do that. So Twitter bombing.
And, yeah, go ahead. I was going to say.
So Twitter bombing is where you talk all about yourself and you literally throw a tweet out there every 15 minutes and you just bomb everybody with tweets. And to add insult to injury, those that put a link in their tweet that when you click on it, it automatically starts playing your podcast. Shame, shame, shame. That's a horrible idea. Please don't do that.
So what would you recommend on the flip side? What should they be doing? If they're not used to using Twitter, but you're saying that that's what they should be doing.
All right. So Twitter is not a broadcast network. It is about engaging and connecting and having conversations. So if all you're talking about is yourself, then you are not grasping the concept of Twitter. However, what you should be talking about is the thing that your podcast is all about. So if you're a comedian or you are have a family podcast or you have a podcast on healthcare, or you have a podcast on podcasting, you should be engaging in conversations with people in that space and doing kind of a pay it forward thing. So find other podcasts in that topic. Find other people who are writing good blog posts and share those. But think about how can you add extra content and context to the field or vertical you're interested in. And oh, by the way, 20% of my tweets are going to be about my podcast.
Yeah. How would you, so this is a personal issue that I've had and I've been on Twitter for a long time and sometimes I find value and sometimes I don't, but there comes a, I guess it's partly because I'm in the marketing world, but there comes a point where I'm following several hundred people that are all marketers and all they're doing is just promoting themselves and I'm trying to find conversations. How do you even go about finding people that will have that conversation with you and that are not just out there promoting their own agenda?
Well, the interesting thing is a lot of the folks that I have the best conversations with now are the people who were my guests on the podcast. So getting to know them and what they're doing and then seeing them in Twitter. Hey, Janet, how's it going? Hey, great. How's your day? Blah, blah, blah. What are you working on? Or you're retweeting their stuff because you're interested in their stuff. So ideally, if you're interviewing, it seems to me, if you're interviewing a bunch of people, if you have an interview show, and you're interviewing a bunch of people, and then you never have a conversation with them again, then why did you interview them in the first place? Because in theory, they should be in your vertical, right?
Right, right. It's a good point. Tell me a little bit about, I think we've had some offline conversations about Blab or Periscope. Are you using either one of those? And how's that going for you?
It's going great. I have a weekly Blab with three other podcasters, the Pharmacy Podcast, the Intrepid Now Healthcare Podcast, and the Health IT Marketer Podcast. So the difference between, for instance, Jared Johnson's Health IT Marketer Podcast and mine is he's very interested in the IT space and in the digital space. Mm. We have interviewed some of the same people, and we've each interviewed each other, which I think is really funny. Because when you go back and listen to each of our individual podcasts with the other person, even though we've interviewed the same people, they're totally different interviews.
Sure, sure.
And so therefore, you know, I wouldn't worry about if somebody likes a particular person, don't worry that they've already been interviewed a few times. Your audience may not have ever heard them before. That said, you need to at least listen to enough interviews so that you can figure out how do I break them out of telling my same old startup story every time. Well, ask them the off the wall, the different kind of question. Find an angle that's true to your podcast theme and ask that in a slightly different way. So maybe you catch them off guard and you get them to break out of the this is what I always say. I did have at least one podcaster who was an influencer who kind of went into auto response mode. He wasn't reading. It's just that he's delivered it a lot from the stage.
Yeah.
And he's just super comfortable telling the story. And I was drifting off going, I've heard this before. So yeah. Had I been maybe later on, I would have found some way to say, so do you dress up at Halloween? And what was your last costume? Something to really just throw him for a loop.
Yeah. So tell me, let's go back to Blab a little bit. So you've got a weekly Blab show, and is that to help you connect with other people in your vertical or your niche, or is that to help promote what you're doing, or a little bit of both?
It's a little bit of both, and also in particular because my other co-hosts are much more on the high-level C-suite business side of healthcare. They're on the IT side. They all love the National Conference HIMSS, which is, you know, a 50,000 person healthcare IT, you know, event, which I'm not sure I would ever attend.
That's big.
It's huge, and it's very specifically in the IT space. So I'm actually looking to them as they're my weekly thought leaders that are bringing other subjects. So how we work it is we trade off being the host. The host sets up the blab, gets to invite a guest, should we have a guest, or mm-hmm. call the topic. We started initially going, okay, each of us pulls a topic, and then each of us is going to have an article that was in the news, and we suddenly found that, you know, no, an hour was nowhere near enough. I'm also of the opinion now that probably 45 minutes is more than enough, because we do it Monday at noon Eastern Standard Time, and so it's either people's lunch or on the Pacific end, it's when they're having their first cup of coffee. So you really don't want to, just because you can talk forever doesn't mean it still is interesting. Same reason that the podcasts that are 90 minutes, I don't have time for a 90-minute podcast, no matter how much fun it is. I would rather have it be concise, to the point, let's answer questions, great. Even if it's fun, even if it's a fun conversation, just don't ramble and waste my time like I'm doing now.
you're definitely not wasting our time. So how about, how many people do you think join you on those blabs each week?
Oh, it's a small audience. It's between 15 and 30. It's the thing that you don't know, because analytics with Blab are not all that fabulous.
Yeah.
Who knows what kind of lifespan it has. So I actually have a widget that on my website that if I host a Blab and I've set it up, it will automatically post to my website within 15 minutes or so. So not the ones from the other people. I could grab those and post those. But since those aren't topics that usually tie directly into healthcare social right. media, but mine are actually there. Now, I don't put them in where my podcasts are, because the format looks different. And the website theme that I have was specifically designed by Appendipity for podcasters. And I put so much time and effort into my podcast that I didn't want the Blab to just suddenly pop over and take sure. precedence. So I'm not reposting. A lot of people do. They're using their Blabs to have an additional podcast stream, or they're putting them up on YouTube. And I have not been really focused on doing that. That's probably an opportunity they have. I know someone who uses Blab who will use the Blab and do it as kind of a Q&A and hopefully get an audience while he's there, get an audience and just replay. But then what he's doing is he's chopping it into every Q&A, every individual question, he's chopping into a short 3 to 5 minute YouTube video.
Wow, okay.
So he's got the initial audience where he says, hey, I'm going to talk about, in this particular case, he happens to talk about online courses. I'm going to talk about online courses and do Q&A. And then he is very clear about his start and stop of his question so that he can chop that in to little pieces. So now he's got 10 questions out of every Blab. So his goal is to have like 500 questions in YouTube. I mean, it's brilliant. It's a great idea. And I really should think about doing that. But I'm just trying to decide how much time and effort would need to go into that to make it pay off.
Do you think Blab is something that's going to be around for a while?
I'm very worried, actually. I love the format. I love the ability to engage. I have met more national social media gurus and names face-to-face via Blab than I have in the whole time I've been doing social media. I love its connectivity and a lot of things about it, and I'd love to be doing a Blab with our North Carolina podcasters group. However, just recently, somebody has published some information that Blab might be rethinking their model. I don't know why. I love it the way it is. They need to do some things technically to make it better.
Sure.
And there are challenges with it. And it's been in beta for over a year. And I don't know when they go to – what's after beta? Theta? Delta?
I think it's typically live. But
yeah.
There's been businesses that have been in beta for years, I think.
Yeah. At some point, they need to call it a business. And I think that, you know, I'd be willing to pay for the platform to get a few things assured. However, now I hear that Blab might be shifting or pivoting or something, and that distresses me because I like it the way it is.
Is there any other tips that you would have for somebody that's not familiar with marketing but is starting a podcast in their specific area of expertise that maybe they should, you know, maybe what's the first thing they should do to start promoting their show and getting their building their audience?
Well, first off, of course, remember that this isn't about broadcasting you. It's about joining whatever community it is that you're talking about. So I see a lot of people in the communities that I'm in that are thinking about podcasting, and I might be starting one soon or in 6 months or whatever. Well, then start now in social media, mm-hmm. not necessarily broadcasting your, you know, the name of your podcast and coming soon, but getting involved to know who are the influencers, who are the people that you want to help now, so that when the time comes where you might need some promotion, they're willing to support you. But it seems like an awful lot of people are just going live without having done the prep work to set up a marketing plan and to start to establish online credibility. And that's kind of surprising.
Yeah, I see that. And whether it's somebody writing a book, starting a podcast, or even launching a new business, there's this old way of thinking of, you know, kind of go behind the curtain and create the thing and then reveal it to the world. But it's much more effective, as you've said, to start finding where people are already gathered around that topic and start building your credibility and helping that community. And then finding out what they need and bringing that to them.
Absolutely. I mean, I had been tweeting actively for at least 6 months in the community so that when finally I was like, hey, I got a podcast, people were saying, hey, everybody, you should listen to Janet's podcast. And it wasn't like, hey, here's a podcast to listen to. It was listen to Janet's podcast.
Right, right.
It made a big difference.
I know we've also spoken offline about you've been a member of Podcasters Paradise for quite some time. How has that community been to you? So if somebody's thinking about getting involved either in that community or another paid program, do you think that's been worth it for you or any helpful tips or warnings?
Well, I definitely think joining a community is a value. And joining a paid community has the benefit of knowing that whoever it was that enticed you to be there should always be there. There was one community I was in where the person whose name was on the community wasn't at all active. Mm. It happened, though, that the community was so strong and the moderators were so good, they answered all the questions, so you didn't necessarily have to have them there. But I did find it odd that that person didn't want to be in the community they started. Now, that said, I have joined a variety of either online course programs or membership sites, and they vary greatly. I think the main thing is, well, you get out what you put in. Nobody's there to, you know, ask you how you're doing. This is not like, you know, middle school. This is, you're on your own, buddy. And when I join communities, I join knowing I need to get this out of it, and I have the time now to go all in for at least 30 days. And I tend to be a huge consumer of content in the first 30 days that I join a group, at which point then I determine, okay, so what am I learning? Am I still learning? Have I made connections with other people? Podcasters Paradise, when I joined, it was a flat fee, whether you broke it into payments or you paid one time. So it was a flat fee. I joined because while I had started my career in radio, it was back in the days when you actually used a razor blade and tape to edit. So I had no idea how to do the technical side. We didn't have a local podcasters group per se, mm-hmm. although once I joined Podcasters Paradise, found three or four other folks in my area who were podcasting and were able to meet up and give some advice. But I really wanted, okay, it might be 2 a.m, but I'm ready to learn how to edit in Audacity. I need to get somewhere to get a question answered. And Podcasters Paradise provided both the tutorial information I needed, but also had an extremely robust community that has always been available almost 24/7, because literally these are people around the world who, sure. you know, if you're having a problem with a mic or an editing problem or where do I get X, and they're also super welcoming to the newbies, that there's always somebody in there going, so how do I launch my podcast?
Right.
And you're like, okay, let's go back to the beginning. So that really is a wonderful community. Now, I understand that it has become maybe a monthly subscription service. So that's where you need to make a decision at this point, because I'm a lifetime member. I love the fact that I can pop in when I need information. If I were paying every month, obviously after 100 episodes, I kind of figured out a lot of things. So I don't know that I would need that service. So I really like the one time and you're in forever deal.
Sure, sure. And what types of podcasts do you listen to when you're not doing the show yourself?
You know, it's funny. I find the iTunes search so horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible that I know I am missing all kinds of awesome podcasts, and it really annoys me. I mean, sometimes I have to search, even though I've got keywords in there, I have to search hard to find myself. And I'm like, nobody's talking about healthcare social media. Why is this so hard to find this podcast? Mm. And it's the same stuff served up over and over and over again. And of course, the mystery of iTunes metrics. So I would say for learning about social media, Social Media Examiner is a must do. And they have a couple of podcasts I listen to. There's about four or five other marketing specific and social media specific podcasts I keep my ear to. I'm a lifelong learner. So there are a couple of podcasts that are just a hoot and a holler. I love Stuff You Missed in History. I love Sawbones, which is kind of gross, but, you know, fun at the same time. And so other than that, I haven't found anything. I don't listen to comedy. I don't listen to long form. I don't listen to stories. I really use it as I want to learn something today.
Right.
The frustrating ones are the ones that are like 5 to 7 minutes long. I know that's great, and it sounds like you have a million podcasts, but buddy, you can't convey much information in 7 minutes. So, and then I have to find another one. And if I'm driving on my stick shift car, that's, you know, 2000, it's not easy to safely find another podcast to listen to. So,
I mean, I think you've touched on, so we don't often talk about it, but I think you can have a podcast that's too short. Just like a lot of people think you can have one that's too long. I think you can have one that's a little bit too short and hard to, it's just not even worth finding and downloading and listening to. And
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think about 15 minutes is my minimum. I will say I do listen to Ask Pat. I actually asked a question on his show and just got my t-shirt this week. It was nice. Really awesome. Nice. Yes. So he's very, very helpful. And sometimes he'll have a short one that might be 7 or 8 minutes long, but usually because he's asking a specific question, it's really worth tuning in to listen to. So I like my podcasts to be what they say the average commute time is about 26 to 30 minutes. So mm-hmm. I kind of shoot for a podcast that's consumable in one ride. There's a couple like Fizzle. I really enjoy their crazy, crazy podcast. A couple times, you know, I'm yelling at the thing going, shut up, let the other guy talk. But I love listening to the energy they have. They're so passionate about what they do, so passionate about helping people become better business people, so that I enjoy listening to that. Even though I'm not necessarily learning anything, what I am getting, though, is affirmation that I might be on the right path. So that's super helpful.
Yeah. And what do you think makes a podcast remarkable? What do you, in your opinion, what makes one stand out more than the others?
I think intention. If you're going to podcast because you really have something to share, something to illuminate, something to bring to other people's attention that they may not know about, that you really care about what you're talking about. I think the podcasts that just are listen to me yammer on, I tend to lose interest in those. But sure. If you've got something specific, even if it's funny or silly or historical or quirky or interesting, you know, that it could be anything, but just be there with an idea that the minute I'm listening is as precious as the minute you're giving.
And if you could only listen to one podcast, what's the most remarkable podcast that you would listen to that you couldn't live without?
Oh, I love Stuff You Missed in History. Okay. I'm a history geek. I'm not the Dan Carlin 4 hour history geek. I like little snippets and quirky people and stories of things that I might have missed in history. So I love those gals. They're doing a great job.
Well, do you have anything going on that you would like to promote? Or I think you've mentioned that your Get Social Health, you've got some courses over there, and I'm not sure how many of our listeners are in the healthcare world, but what are you doing over there?
Well, so the interesting thing about Podcaster's Paradise and the podcast world is there are an awful lot of people who start a podcast thinking, this is my get rich quick. They've heard the three stories of people who hit it out of the park and are really awesome, you know, the top one percenters. But let me tell you, if you start with no audience of any kind and not a firm plan, or you're a shadow of someone else's podcast, it is not thousands of people. The Libsyn folks will tell you the average download per episode is like 165. Mm-hmm. So set your goals that are realistic in that sense. So one of the things that always was being talked about is that horrible word, monetization, monetization, monetization. And you know what? If we wanted to be in radio, go be in broadcast radio and sell ads. But if you want to be in a podcast and convey information, you need to find that unique audience who's willing to support you in some way, or you do it just because you believe in it. So that's where I started. And then as I was moving forward, I was getting some folks who were asking, you know, 101 level questions and what is this all about? And the tricky thing about social media and healthcare is patient privacy is of tantamount importance, not just because it's the polite thing to do, but because you have federal and state laws and regulations that apply to it. So you can't pick up Facebook for Dummies and just start posting in social media without training, not just for the person doing it, but really for the complete staff. There fortunately haven't been any fines levied as far as a HIPAA problem in social media, but there definitely have been people who have lost their job, lost their licenses, facing lawsuits. So it became obvious that the way for me to monetize my podcast was to teach and was to share this information in an informative an interesting way. So one of the things I've been doing for the last 2 or 3 years is individual webinars for healthcare associations like the American Academy of Dermatology and the American Physical Therapy Association. But again, you only reach 30, 50, you know, 90 people in a webinar. If I took that content and put it in an online course format, then I have the potential to reach a lot more people. So the past year has been very much an exploration of how to start my own business and how to do online courses and a lot of learning about software and WordPress and a lot of fun stuff like that. So I actually created a sister site, GetSocialHealthAcademy.com, because I didn't want to have my messing around with a WordPress website to in any way cause a problem that my podcast would go down.
So right.
Get Social Health is pure podcasting and pure blabs. And from there, you can see some links to get over to Get Social Health Academy. So the first part was creating online courses. And then the second part is going to be doing that through affiliates and having practice management specialists and agencies that deal in small practice marketing use my courses for either onboarding, teaching, of that sort. And then I'm also launching the big thing that's just launched this June is something called Social Content Solutions. And that the biggest problem that all the small practices have is they don't have expertise, one, which of course you can learn, but then feeding the voracious appetite of social media for content is really what's making it so hard for small practices to engage. So what I have is a healthcare-oriented social media strategy and content that they can use to fill the funnel. And then I give them a lot of other information about blog post ideas and then how to take this content that's out here and how to customize it for your local practice. So it's giving you about 75% of what you need to have a nice, healthy Facebook and online presence. And then here are the things you can do to kind of fill that out. So Social Content Solutions is the big thing I'm talking about, and hopefully get to a point where I can actually have it vertically based. So in other words, right now it's healthcare, but hopefully I'm going to end up with a package that's ophthalmology and cosmetic surgery.
Mm, yeah,
and,
very good.
You know, that sort of thing. So that's the big push that's on now, is trying to make people more aware of that. But again, the folks who need to know it are folks that aren't super into social media right now. So I'm having to relearn some classic online marketing techniques to try and find in an inexpensive way my potential audience. So we know they're there as human beings, as people, just not necessarily as medical professionals. So I don't know. I might have to be calling on David Mooring, get some help there.
Well, you know, I'm happy to help. And that sounds really promising there. So I wish you all the best. And I'll include a couple of links to that on my notes page. So if somebody wants to check out what you're doing, they can do that. Where else should we go to find you? I know you're active on Twitter. Anywhere you want to send us?
So if you look for Get Social Health, you will stumble across me in Twitter, in Facebook, in LinkedIn, and obviously the podcast, the website. So it's all Get Social Health. And the only thing that's different is the Get Social Health Academy, which is the courses and social content solutions.
Awesome. Well, everybody go check out what Janet is doing and say hi, and that you heard her here on the Remarkable Podcast. And Janet, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate all your advice. You've provided a lot of tips here, a lot of useful information. I really appreciate it.
Always a great pleasure talking to you, David.
Thanks. Let's keep in touch. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of Remarkable, part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. As always, I appreciate you taking time to listen, and I hope you took away some helpful tips and insights from my conversation with Janet. You can find my notes from this interview, all the relevant links, and a full transcript at supersimple.com/Janet. That's supersimple.com/JANET. If you enjoyed this episode or learned something to help you with your podcast or your business, please do me a huge favor and share it with someone you think would also find it valuable. Also, just like on Amazon, user reviews let people know if the show is worth listening to or not. So if you don't mind, please take a minute to head over to iTunes and leave me an honest review. I would greatly appreciate it. And last but not least, if you have a question about marketing, a suggestion or feedback, or if you just want to connect with me, please take a minute to shoot me an email. My email address is dave@supersimple.com, and I would certainly love to hear from you. This episode of Remarkable is sponsored by Bethesda Roasting Company, a North Carolina-based small-batch gourmet coffee roaster that prides itself on offering only the highest quality single-origin coffee from around the world. Perfectly roasted to present the best flavors of each varietal they sell. In addition to using only quality beans, all coffees are roasted within 72 hours of being shipped. And as a self-proclaimed coffee snob myself, with over 9 different ways to make coffee at home, I can tell you from experience that if you've never had coffee that's been roasted within just a few days before you brew it, you don't know what you're missing. Fresh coffee is night and day from anything that you can even purchase in a grocery store or a boutique store or even something like a Whole Foods. So head on over to BethesdaCoffee.com, check out their monthly subscription plan so you can get it fresh to your door. Use code SUPERSIMPLE50 at checkout to save 50% on your first purchase of their Explorer or Adventurer subscription. That's BethesdaCoffee.com, and I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Our theme music was composed by Julio Gonzalez at Zymer. Zymer, or Remix, spelled backwards, offers sound design and audio post-production for podcasts, video, audiobooks, game, apps, and radio. In addition to my theme music, I've also been using Zymer for some of my post-production work, and I've been extremely pleased with the result. You can learn more about them or contact them today at Zymer.co, that's Zymer.co. And tell Julio you heard about Zymer on the Remarkable Podcast. You can save 50% on any of their services. And if you would like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course designed to help you grow your audience and reach more listeners, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. That's it. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Remarkable.